Hey. And welcome back to Let's Dig Into That podcast, where we embrace the struggle of being intentionally human. Join us as we volunteer our vulnerability in pursuit of growth and lasting change.
Yep.
That voice you just heard, my wonderful co-host, her brain works so darn fast. She struggles to sit still because she's always on the hunt for her next thrill. It's Jordan, everybody.
That's right. I like it. A gentleman of many names, but just one dame. Let's call him James. Hey, everybody. It is JT sitting with me. That's right. I am the one.
You're the dame.
Yes. Thank you.
Not Dame Dollar Sign. He's a basketball player. Damian Lillard. Sorry.
I'm sure there's... I should work a dollar sign into my name. You know, I'm more of like an... Yeah.
You don't have an S.
Ampersand? I could do an ampersand. Maybe. That could be good. What is happening? You feeling good?
I am feeling good. I love that I sort of blew your mind on something here.
Blew it up. I think, yeah.
You want to talk about how that went when I was like, I've got an idea.
Yes. JT comes to me with just wide-eyed enthusiasm. I'm like, oh my God. He's like, babe, are you familiar with, do you know what a near enemy is? And I'm like, oh man, this is about to get real juicy, because if yeah. he is willing, like, I don't hear you use the word enemy often, but I'm like, this is frenemy. This is somebody who's about to get some.
So you thought I was about to spill it.
Full on tea moment. And then he said Buddhist and Brené Brown. And I was like, all right, I'm still in.
Yes.
But very different. Do you know what a near enemy is? I think I do. I don't.
So this is not a new concept in the world. Obviously, it exists in Buddhist culture, but Brené Brown, who we talk Dr. about all Lee. The time,
yeah.
Really dug deep into this, and it just blew my mind. I was listening to Atlas of the Heart, her book, while I was driving down to the metro area yep. and had a lot of time in the car, and I was just like, oh my gosh, how have I never learned about this?
In true Jordan form, I'm like, I read that book, and I was like, no, I've never. And so it was amazing and pretty captivating to go back. You had every right to be like, oh, damn.
It's really, it just blew me away and made me want to be a better person.
So that is our cause here today. I agree that the reason to have, we both felt so motivated to have this chat is it give, like for me, it's like, yeah, a balanced awareness that I enjoy a little temptation. Like, I want to do a little better.
Yeah, so let's tell the people what we're talking about. Because near enemy, just thinking about those two words, what we're talking about is basically an imposter emotion. Yes, but the actual definition is states that appear similar to a desired virtue or quality, but actually undermine it. Does that make sense? Like,
I'm getting there.
It's tough, but...
Because so like, it is. It's fooling yourself into thinking you're on track and you're so damn close.
Exactly.
So it's not a, like a far enemy is another word for opposite.
Exactly. The opposite.
And so
of
a near enemy is like, I'm on track. And then you show up at your destination. You're like, oh, dang.
Exactly. So the one that I always want to be a compassionate person, you know, I always want to make sure. And I feel like that I am. However, this made me question everything. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, oh, of course I'm a compassionate person. But you know what the near enemy of compassion is?
Let's think about it. Okay. If I'm trying to be compassion is, since we're sticking with the Buddhists, I would love it if we had any sort of professional training there. But compassion would be the combination of both love and suffering together.
Uh-huh.
And so a near enemy, if I'm not willing to suffer with you,
right.
but so, I love you.
Right. And so remember that it's near. So it's like right. close to compassion.
So I'm saying I'm giving you half-assed, ooh, I think I know.
Because
I've done, it's yeah, I've done a little bit of looking, but pity.
That's right. 100%.
And because I'm not willing to put myself and actually empathize to the extreme of like putting myself in your shoes for your pain moment, even though I'm still saying like, oh, bless your heart, not compassionate.
At all. And pity is, it's really not a positive thing. When you pity someone, you're kind of looking down on them. You're kind of like, oh, that sucks for you.
Right. Yeah. And that's the shitty thing about, I'm so glad we're talking about this. The shitty thing about near enemies is really tricky, if I'm not mistaken, to probably diagnose until the end, until the action is done. So like if you were to give someone words or something out of pity,
uh-huh.
they're going to receive it with that vibe.
Yep.
And you're going to know, oh, that wasn't compassionate based on that reaction.
That's exactly why this blows my mind.
Yeah, it's a high risk. So this is dangerous.
Well, most of us probably don't even know. You don't even know.
You don't even know.
You don't even know. Like, you could be thinking you're a very compassionate person, just like I was. But in reality, you could just be offering pity, which doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. It undermines the actual emotion. Mm-hmm. That's crazy to me.
Like, that's crazy. So to make sure we are getting near enemy, should we do, like, can you give me a couple more examples? Because I know we're going to circle back to compassion because I'm already seeing a couple more flaws in my system. I'm seeing where I might be coming up teeny tiny bit short.
Absolutely. You want to play a little game and try to guess what they are?
Okay, I'll try. I just got pity, man. What do you
We need some jingle music. You did get pity. You got one correct answer here already. So.
Matching games. Okay.
Exactly, matching games. So again, the concept of near enemy, it's a very close thing, but it's not fully there, and it actually undermines the feeling. All right?
Unravels the effort you're putting in. So you have to be pretty discerning to, okay,
so let's diagnose. Go with like the biggest emotion. Love.
Oh, I was like, anger. Is it anger? No. Okay, so love.
If you go straight to anger.
Anger, it's a big one.
That's funny.
It's so fiery.
So love, what would be the near enemy? Something that's close? Because
like opposite, far enemy would be like hate, hostility. Yeah.
Exactly. That would be your far enemy.
So, oh man, I don't know. Do you want to take this one?
So it's... This is a scary one for me too when I read this. It's attachment. Because think about how you could be attached to someone and how easily that could be misconstrued in your body, your mind, and your heart as love.
Dare I ask it here? Is it clingy or is it love? And that's a difference.
Exactly. Is this person that you feel like you love, are you just attached to them because they make your life easier? Because they add something to your life? That's attachment. Mm. It's not love. And if you stay in a state of attachment,
dangerous.
It's so scary. It's terrifying. But again, the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because it really gave me my own personal insight. I'm learning this stuff as we're talking about it, and it just makes me want to be a better person. And like, wow, I do probably feel attachment towards people that I say I love you to. You're not in that category, but
I think we have fleshed out here live on this pod that I do think, no, I don't think that it was solely attachment, but I do think the way we love. And yeah, there was probably some border. You were dipping a toe in the attachment water, man.
Really? You feel that way? Huh?
I do. Do you not?
Well, what comes with love is unconditional. You know, like that's really a key of it, is that attachment has conditions.
And I don't know if I believe in unconditional love.
Well, it's tricky in a relationship, but I think that unconditional love exists in your family very much. You know, you don't love your dad based on what he's able to build for you.
He could get away with,
but inside of a relationship, there should be some conditions to your love, truly.
Yeah, I would call respect one of my conditions, both give and take.
Absolutely.
That I would hold myself, to that state.
And I agree with that, but when I'm trying to simplify some of these concepts, because I think they're brain melting.
But what an amazing thing, like, to think about, oh, this person loves and adores me, and that is not at all. They are manipulating you into, this desperate kind of need or interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I ruined the game. You're fine.
I didn't say rapid fire. Okay. All right. This is a tricky word. We might have to define the word first, but equanimity.
Okay.
Do you know what that is? I'm sure you do.
Yes. And I get it too on where we're headed, because with our Buddhist little, I'm going to quickly umbrella.
Okay.
The four immeasurables are kind of the heart thought process. And I am butchering all of this. I think I've given enough of them. But the four immeasurables are the four abodes. But those are basically, if you operate from that place in your heart, as the monks are trying, you know, that's what they're meditating to do, I believe, from my understanding. These four qualities, if you live from that place, you will live a much richer, fuller, potentially more joyful, peaceful life, even though all the crazy shit of the world exploding around you has remained unchanged.
Exactly.
And so that's why we both
change
wanna
from within.
The change, yeah, because you can't make change on the outside unless you're doing the change from within.
100% accurate.
We'll get on that horse at a later date. So equanimity. Now that's how I know that word. And so the four qualities. Then to just quickly rattle those off:
loving kindness. Yes.
Loving kindness is first. Compassion. Sympathetic joy. And then equanimity. And so equanimity, I'm like, okay, I kind of get it. Like, that's my general idea. So I did look and have to quickly search it out here. A state of balance. Freedom from attachment and aversion. Acceptance of things as they are.
I'm really glad I didn't mansplain that to you. Because I was like, I know.
I brain-splained it to myself.
There you go.
Like a grown-up.
Exactly. I didn't want to.
So equanimity, because that's what I would have been like, a balanced approach. But I'm like, that still, you still have to stand for something. And so I think the cool part that I'm taking from this is,
The last part of that I like a lot.
The acceptance of things as they are, but also means I'm going to speak up if this is inconsistent with my values. That I'm not. So that's where I'm taking equanimity is like, okay, I am fully processing this.
But not being affected by sort of the outcomes because you are so in tune with yourself is basically how I interpret it. So what would be a near enemy?
Because if I knew somebody who was... And I thought, wow, they're really showing off their equanimity today. I'd think they're pretty chill. And so, like, to have, indifference.
Ding, 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 ding. You nailed it.
I felt good about it.
You cheated.
I'm sure I've cheated in some way. But I'm like, it makes sense where indifference is, I'm going to lay down and let it wash over. Like, it's, you can be.
I'm not going to let that affect me. And that's very confusing because it's so close to equanimity.
Right.
Where
the chill capacity.
You
want to
make sure things happen as they are and you're okay with that. The real difference in my mind is indifference doesn't require that really intentional thought process.
Evaluation.
Exactly. When we're talking about equanimity, you have weighed your options and considered things. In indifference, it's in one ear, out the other. You don't care.
Exactly.
But see how closely related they are, where you could be like, oh, yes, equanimity. That is one of my...
I would have thought before this conversation, be like, oh, I can be pretty indifferent. Like, I'm go with the flow. I'm cool. And now it sounds like, oh, what a lazy, you know, you are not vested in, where's your pulse? And so, ooh, big word day. Okay.
Yeah, I like that one. All right. This is a big one because our whole podcast is basically like we believe in the power of
connection.
What would be
the disconnection's probably the far enemy.
I would say that that's accurate. Yes.
Okay. Just tell me this one. I don't know. So
control.
Whoa. Okay.
Yeah.
Hold. Let me get in my map real quick. All right. So that makes great sense. So to connect, so I'm thinking about relationships where you're another risk. Like I think indifference even kind of plays in there where you're like, if you aren't speaking, you're being yourself, if you aren't present in that relationship, are you capable of actually connecting with someone else or with a group or whatnot? And so control.
Right. And so I like the word.
I think control just squashes the other person's chance to be vulnerable.
Well, and yours. If you're constantly trying to control a situation, you're eliminating vulnerability.
True, because I'm kind of trying to control how you see me.
Exactly.
Not just controlling. That's a good point.
And that's exactly why it's the opposite of connection, because I would argue, I think Brene would argue, I think most people would argue, without vulnerability, connection is almost impossible. Like if you're not practicing a vulnerability and letting people in to who you are, the connection becomes almost an impossibility. And so control... It can feel like you're connecting. The biggest idea, like I know that I am guilty of this, but I'm a people pleaser to my core. I want to make sure that everyone around me feels
good. That's controlling.
Good. It's controlling and it lacks vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think it's a near enemy of connection is I think that I'm doing all these things to connect. I'm people pleasing because I want you to feel good and we're connecting. But in reality, I'm actually distancing ourselves because there's no vulnerability at all. And that's why control is the near enemy of connection.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And I'm even taking in, because you might have with your big listening to books and stuff while you're driving, that you were like, maybe you want to revisit that chapter on perfectionism.
Yes.
And I don't have any personal awareness about it. I'm like, there's not one damn thing in my life close to feeling perfect, but I do have a tendency to tend the shit out of things. Like, I have killed every succulent that has ever crossed my threshold.
Leave it alone.
And so I think that my obsession with how I'm coming off, how I'm presenting in this, that, wow, I would have thought control would usually be me wanting to manhandle the other person's, like, what we're doing, where we're going, all that stuff, distancing us from a possible connect.
Yeah.
But I think that perfectionism might another breakthrough.
All right, so let's stay in the game. You got two right. I'm blown away. Good job.
How many more? I think there were four of both. Hit me. All right.
We got three left. Three left. Okay. Mindfulness. What would be the near enemy of mindfulness?
Dead. No, that's far enemy. Okay. A near, it's probably another big word. Do you
and
want
so,
to take this?
Well, what does mindfulness mean to you? Like, when I say that word, what do you think of? Like, it.
When I think of mindfulness, I think, okay, here's what I'm going to play is this game. The opposite, the far enemy. If I'm not being mindful, I am popping off.
Okay.
And so I am incredibly reactionary. I shouldn't say incredibly. I am reactionary.
Okay.
And so then the opposite of that, going back to your original word of being mindful. So is it something kind of like that indifference-ish where it's like
it is very close, yes.
What could it be where I just don't, where so I can't, I'm acting as though I'm giving a hoot, but I'm not fully hooting.
Yep.
I'm
going to give you a ding, 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 ding on that one too, because it's complacency.
Cool.
So I think you defined that beautifully.
So if you're not being mindful, that makes sense. You're being complacent with your,
whatever.
That's a good one.
I like that one too. All right, the near enemy of loving kindness. Any thoughts?
I don't. Kindness, I feel, again, is like the compassion. And so I feel like I'm still in that, so some sort of a defensive,
I'll give you a little,
self-protection.
I'll give you a little bit of a hint. I think when most people hear this word, the near enemy of loving kindness, they think about money. Before anything else, but it doesn't just apply to money.
Greed.
Greed. Exactly right. And again, you can be greedy in so many ways. Mm-hmm. You can be greedy with people's attention and affection. You can be greedy in a lot of different
ways.
Time,
energy, money. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah. Greed, I think sometimes I'm greedy for what I need from you. You know, sub greedy for needy. This episode of Let's Dig Into That is brought to you by
The Jig Is Up. Expecting people to say the right thing, hoping that this time, just this once, they won't jam their foot in their mouth, making everyone uncomfortable, hitting just the wrong note to set you back? Studies have shown that it's rare for people to intend to come off as culturally dense, socially off-putting, or straight up ignorant as what rolls out of their mouth or onto the screen. Is your thick skin starting to chafe? For just three easy payments of $49.95, this micro audio insert is guaranteed to improve your life. Introducing the Intention Translator. Whether it's what they meant or the words you need to hear, get the Intention Translator today. This itty-bitty teeny-tiny chip can be concealed on hearing aids, earrings, even available in permanent tattoo. When the words don't match the sentiment, leave the emotional healing for the birds. Intention Translator ensures you only hear what they were trying to say. Flip pity for compassion. Craving competence? Turn underhanded compliments into hella heartfelt praise. Buffer the incentive to throat punch another with Intention Translator. Let us keep you from burning all dim bridges. During the word from our sponsors, I don't know if I had the full time to rabbit hole, so I'll call it bunny divot. I did a little bunny divot into compassion because that's where this all got started.
Yes, we did start with compassion.
And so there, this idea of fierce compassion, because mindfulness is what came up, of you cannot be compassionate without the element of mindfulness. That's how I got down my little path here.
Okay.
And so I was
I love when you're in a rhythm like this.
I had a whole, I was on a journey without you there. I'm so sorry. But mind you, because again, with that pity risk where you're like, I'm sort of putting in the effort, but I'm not fully being authentically presenting to empathize.
And to be compassionate just real quick, like it's about being able to draw on your own experiences. You know what I mean? Like you can't really be compassionate if you can't understand how someone's feeling. Like you really have to be able to understand what someone's going through. And most of us, I would argue, probably the vast majority of us live in that pity state where we can feel bad for someone, but we don't let ourselves feel it. You know?
Right. We're very self-protective by nature as humans. And so it's true to expose yourself to this horrific news and this, that you can say the right things, but you know, not necessarily being all the way there.
Yes.
Because it is. It's difficult to equalize the experience because we all haven't lived it. And I still think you can be there for someone where to say, oh, I'm sorry, don't present me with your problem. I've never lived that. So there's no way I could express compassion for you. Not at all the case. So we're like the whole punchline of this, I think, best intentions. Like,
exactly.
Give it a go. So under this idea of like fierce compassion, really going for the glory.
Yes.
There are three parts.
Okay.
Number one being the mindfulness,
uh-huh,
which we now know the near enemy, complacency. See, I listen. Woo-hoo! Then the second one, kindness.
Okay.
And that we've kind of talked about. That's where this particular research, Kristen Neff and there's a Christopher, I think it's Grammer.
Okay.
It'll be in the show notes. Grammer sounds right, but that is the pity element. So it's not really really kind if you're just in that defensive mode of
protection. Self-protection, mm-hmm, I think, is very much a part of pity.
Right. Because, we don't want to feel pain. Human nature. The third one, here we go. Common humanity.
Common humanity. Ooh.
And so you kind of exactly were touching on the concept of you have to relate it. That common humanity has to be present for me to deliver on the goods of being fully compassionate and present. So what, your turn, do you think would be...
You're putting me on the hot seat, huh?
That's right. Sizzle, sizzle, man. The near enemy of common humanity. Maybe it's better to start like I did with the far enemy. What would be the opposite?
Opposite of common humanity would be, I don't know, I think of
demonizing,
like hate.
Demonizing,
Or like dehumanizing someone.
I think you're spot on. That seems really, that one I'm going to let go. Yeah.
Well, again, I listened to this recently. But the near enemy of something that would be similar, but...
To common humanity. Huh. A component, one of the three components of compassion.
Well, I feel like, again, common humanity is this concept of like we can understand what someone else is going through and sort of feel it and empathize
putting
from our
shoes.
Own experiences, putting yourself in someone else's shoes. I don't know.
Let me spill the beans for you.
Yeah, go for it.
Sameness.
Sameness is the near enemy?
Is the near enemy. And I think that
is... Of common humanity.
Of common humanity, which is on paper, makes good sense. But it is so hurtful and harmful. But you're like, oh, yeah, we're all the same. Of course I can relate. How diminishing, how, again, your word of distance and connection. Like
thinking
that one
someone has the same experiences that you have.
You don't know my shoes. You don't know my history. The sameness, different from oneness. But like, saying you're colorblind, not a thing that's helpful. Because your experience, I'm having this conversation on this podcast today to appease some of my freaking white privilege, damn it. Because, that is completely dismissive.
This made you feel privileged learning this stuff?
I woke up privileged today. Ta-da. And it's just, it's a lot. It's a big cross to bear. But, that it made me feel like sameness and not being able to relate. This one tickled my interest on, I would love to give more attention and effort to see when I notice this kind of pop up in my reaction.
It's so interesting, especially like the way of the world right now and, people feeling so disconnected and we have, a split in our country that we've never had before. And I think it's easy to sit there and look at another person and think, oh, I know their experience. I know who they are based on simple things like their skin color or where they grew up or, you know, and in reality, we know nothing about that person.
Common humanity does not threaten individuality.
Right.
Where sameness.
I love that.
I'm just saying, didn't even write that down.
Yeah.
That came from the bunny divot. Wisdom from the divot.
Wow. So, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that.
Communist Manifesto. Interesting, yes, but one of the books that comes up in conversation.
Well, we try not to talk too much about politics, but anyone who's ever read, and I had to read it in school.
That's the only other time you and I have ever, I think, used the word sameness in conversation, that's where things kind of fall apart in the, like, again, exactly. This is not a political affiliation of any realm, but I think the sameness idea is inherent.
Is sort of what the downfall of communism was. Because, like, on paper, there's a lot of things that make sense. And don't hold me wrong. Like, don't think I'm saying anything here. But the real downfall of it is they really try to make this idea of we're all the same. And it strips people of individuality and really, like, hinders people from feeling who, like, they know who they are.
Right. Yeah. The threat to the common humanity is like, yeah, the hostility inherent, like the unintentional hostility that comes off of that, yeah, placating that we are one and the same.
Yeah. So I got to ask you, can you put yourself in the shoes of a near enemy when you've acted? Like, is there a personal experience that you can think of where you're like, man, I certainly wasn't achieving, I'll just say compassion because we've talked about it the most. Mm-hmm. I was definitely in that pity category. Can you think of a moment in your life where you've operated from a state of a near enemy and it was maybe detrimental to your life?
Oh, detrimental to my life.
Or a relationship? Or
I feel like there were relationships that have come and gone in a way that they never were. That my people pleasing, to use that one, that struck, I think, the biggest chord of... I was such a character that I knew this person would love. And gotcha. I could justify it to myself where, you know, I enjoy so many things. My scope is so broad. Like, I had fun, but I could notice it once again at the end that I'm aware now that it was a near enemy experience because I was freaking exhausted or didn't really take, like,
how they reacted.
Yeah, the, like, drive home of, like, what just went down? And it by no means was in the realm of connection, but it was like that was a hang. That was an intense hang where I really went for it. And so I feel embarrassed of... I'm not an embarrassed in a way that I'm going to give an ounce of a hoot when this wraps up, but I feel like, oh man, I really missed some potentially great opportunities had I decided to just be Jordan. Wouldn't that have been nice?
Right.
And so I don't feel, yeah.
At certain ages in your life, that is so challenging though to
exactly.
Just,
that's what I'm like, know, forgiveness.
How do you just be Jordan when you're not sure who Jordan is? You know, like that's, I think about teenagers and I think about my upbringing and I can... What you just said, I just think about, like, I've said on the podcast in the past that I have shape-shifted. I have molded myself to the specifications of others. And what this concept of near enemy has helped me realize is how controlling those actions are. Mm-hmm. You know, I've never really thought about how me trying to do what that person wants is actually me controlling the narrative.
Right.
And so, again,
if I said that's so controlling, you'd be like, no way. Like, yeah.
I love what you said at the beginning of this. You were like, you don't even know you're in the category of the near enemy until it plays out.
Yeah.
And that's so true.
Until the damage is done.
Which is the scary part about all this, but I can totally see that in my life. The times in my life where I've shape-shifted to be... to meet the specifications that someone else wants me to meet. Mm-hmm. I don't have any relationships left of when I did that. Like, they all are gone.
Well, cause that guy's gone.
They weren't rooted in connection. That's control is the near enemy of connection. And so me controlling that narrative the whole time just made it actually impossible for us to really connect. And those people aren't a part of my life anymore. Even though some of them, I wish they were.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother, that's a whole nother combo right there.
So
do you think that, I know we were talking control there, but I'm thinking about my, like, oh, I would consider myself a compassionate person on paper. yada, yada. Are you capable? Is this a thing? Are you capable of being compassionate if you aren't, if you have no self-compassion? Or no. if you struggle? Because I would say I am not great at, I would never talk to another human being with the words that I use on myself. And I'm getting much better at it. But you, I think we all can relate that we're like, that's nasty.
You know how I feel about negative self-talk. And so my...
He does not like it.
My instant answer on that is like, no, if you don't have compassion for yourself, of course you can't have compassion for anyone else. Like, I don't see how that would be possible.
Right, doesn't it put on, isn't it that imposter moment that if I can't even treat myself with the respect, the conditions on which I hold my love, that if I can't do that, how... Can you see it? I mean, again, does everybody know I'm just bullshitting along? Well, I hope not, but
that's why this concept is so interesting, is because you'd be maybe offering pity as opposed to compassion. Right. And that's really, really dangerous when we pity. But again, I would argue that most of us live in that category. And the way I thought about this is I asked a question that I sort of regret because it's it's not exactly how I'd like to think about it. But my question was, can you sort of outgrow compassion? Do you get tarnished by seeing like traumatic things over and over again, and then you have less compassion? Like, is compassion something that we sort of lose as we have more experiences? And I asked that because I was sitting here thinking about my own life, where when you work with kids and kids from hard places, you expose yourself to a lot of terrible things. And at the beginning of my career doing this, they would rattle me. And I would
sleepless nights.
And then 3 years in, I was like, oh yeah, we got another person in this situation. And I'm not sure if it was less.
You process it differently.
Exactly. Yeah. And so do we become less compassionate?
Numb to the extreme. Right. And it is horrific. If you think of, I mean, the classic example is tragically like school shootings how quickly you can dismiss that portion of the news today when that was, you know, world rocking at one point in our lives.
Right. And the reason that I said I sort of regretted asking and thinking that is because I thought about it deeper. And that really is more pity than it is compassion. The way I realized that was I thought about like, hearing the noise of like a child passing. No matter how many times that happens, it breaks my heart.
Absolutely.
And that is true compassion. And what I think about is, I think about my mom and how devastated she'd be if I were to pass. And that's sort of the connector. That's sort of the connector of the common humanity and how I would define
very dark
compassionate versus pity. I didn't mean to be dark.
So very dark.
That's how it worked in my mind.
I went to tragedy too. I mean, we've covered some areas. But so the question being like, does it get sanded down? Is that depth of compassion? And I think that is going back to our immeasurables and the monks, like am I correct in assuming like if you give a shit enough to want to put effort into, you know, I want to treat myself nicer, and knowing that an effect of that will be my ability to enhance my relationships with others.
Right.
Awesome.
Exactly right.
Awesome. Yeah. And so
I love the way you framed that. Much lighter than what I just said.
But I think that, walk me through this example being like, okay, is grandma and grandpa sitting in the porch swing? Uh-huh. They've seen some stuff. They've been through some stuff. And this grandparent finds out that grandkid is dropping out of college to go to art school or culinary school or taking a trip around the Great Lakes.
Uh-huh.
And they, like, what is their compassion? If they, like, maybe I should have used like, you know, if they get kicked out of school, I feel like the read that there is some seasoned where it's like, they'll figure it out.
Right.
You know, where it's like, I care in my heart about this person, but I can't give compassion to this particular situation. That seems like a you problem, you know? And so I wonder, cause you're like, they've seen so much, but I'm going, wow. Do I also think that folks that have seen so much are capable of deeply helping heal and move mountains to make social, justice
happen. I love
happen.
In that example that you just gave us, we're talking about compassion. However, it made me think about equanimity.
Oh, geez. That do you want me to read the definition one more time?
Sure, why not?
State of balance.
State of balance and letting things be as they are.
Freedom from attachment and aversion.
And so think about that. That's something that we want, the balance. That's the positive. The near enemy of that is indifference. And so is that old couple practicing equanimity? Or are they indifferent to that child's life? You know, like, oh, I don't care if they go to college, like, whatever.
Right.
You know, that's what it made me sort of think of. And is if it's a true balance of like, hey, my granddaughter will find her way. That's like believing and mm-hmm. knowing that things are going to happen, let it happening. When
more conscious,
the indifference would be like,
whatever. Another one bites the dust.
Exactly.
Seen this play out 100 times.
Exactly right.
Well, I think it's, I just can't help but he's like, do you know, hey, babe, near enemy. What? This is not even remotely in the wheelhouse of how I thought we were going to head down this path.
Again, I don't want to bang the drum too hard, but this was something that we got to sort of learn alongside each other and with our listeners. And it's just an opportunity to sort of self-reflect and think about, am I falling into these categories that could be somewhat detrimental? Or am I actually practicing this real state of emotion or state of being? And that's really important to sort of think about because it's an opportunity to do better for yourself. What I really hate is we're kind of talking about it like it's black and white. There's a lot of gray area. It's not just you're compassionate or you're practicing pity. There's other things in there. You could be compassionate to a certain situation as opposed to not the whole element of something that someone's going through.
Exactly, the piece.
And I think that's important to recognize is that there isn't just two categories here.
But it's so, I feel grateful having it brought to my attention that I could be, working toward mindfulness. And if I end up at complacency, mm-hmm. where I'm like, I'm so mindful and I'm so zen, I'm not getting it.
Right.
So I think I would be bummed mm-hmm. to arrive at the finish line knowing that my efforts were for naught.
Well, the one that really shattered me because I could relate so much was the control aspect, being the near enemy of connection. And there's very few connections in my life where I feel like I don't try to control the narrative. And it's really scary to think about. Mm-hmm. And just being mindful and being aware of that will make me focus a little bit harder on building those connections and making sure that I'm being authentic to who I am, because that's the only way we really connect.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my favorite takeaway from near enemy.
I love it. Well, it's just, I think my takeaway would be your intentions are good. And yes, we know it's so close. The paths can look so similar of that compassionate, close to pity, that love close to attachment, that it is at the end game, the difference between wholeheartedness
right.
and brokenheartedness. Because, I mean, shockerino. And so I think I'm really glad this was brought to my attention. I really appreciate it. Like, this has been super, kept me curious.
Absolutely.
And without you guys, I mean, I can't imagine. Thank you so much for being here with us. Like, that makes the convo extra.
100%.
And now it's time for Yeditations. The thoughts in our brains keeping us from meditating.
So I can't stop thinking about the things that I suck at.
Oh, I did not. Oh.
And here's what I mean. Like, it's just dwelling in my mind. I've spent so much of my life working on these limitations and working my ass off to try to be better at the things I'm not good at. And yesterday I was introduced to a philosophy that basically says, if you're not good at it, and it doesn't bring joy and progress mm-hmm. to your life, why are you wasting your time trying to get better at it? Help. Get some assistance. Find someone else who can do that element of that job and focus on what you're good at. And my mind exploded.
I love that we were exposed to the same philosophy at the same table at the same time. And somehow the translation of that experience, very different. Because I believe the word we were given was, these are frustrations.
Yes.
That you are already, you are born wired.
Right.
That you're great at this shit. You can do this stuff well, but doesn't give you a lot of zhuzh. And then there are things you are inherently kind of, they drain you.
They drain you.
They drain you. And so you felt permission
to get someone else to do it for me.
Yeah, sometimes you throw, my phrase, throw money at the problem and understand that sometimes can be quite limiting. But yes, hire out the things. And it is kind of to
or ask for help or like, it's just sharpen strengths has always been in my sort of vocab, but this put it into a new concept for me. And I'm just sitting here turning of like, man, how much of my time do I spend trying to get better at things that drain me?
I was curious about your opening. I'm like, Mr. Preaching, the strength support and appreciating the good. I was like, what has happened? And so, yeah, we got a gratitude adjustment coming in hot. But how cool is it that not only was my favorite part the I got permission again to know, not my area, not my flavor, and you took it as that's not the end of the road. There's a solution.
Right.
There's other, you aren't flawed. You just
get some help.
Get some help.
Amazing.
This has been Yeditations.
I think what the Buddhists want us to take away and to know is like, it is human nature. Like, how can we figure out a way to respond to someone else's pain and hurt without causing pain and hurt?
Pain and hurt. Oof.
That's it. That's all we got to do.
I hope you're not expecting me to answer that question.
Because
that's,
no
that's
idea.
Like the biggest question in life.
Right. And so.
Yeah.
Try.
Exactly. There you go. Do your damnedest.
Yeah. How do you do that? I guess, how do we do it without that self-protecting?
Right.
Without control, without distancing? Because I don't want to be emotional reaction volcano. I'd like to be the mindful.
Yes.
Zen.
I mean,
ninja.
If I had to answer that question, I would just say vulnerability and then offer no explanation and just wander away. You know, because that's just a huge question. But yeah, I want to do better too. I want to be a more connected, compassionate person.
I think I'm going to tap out on today, but I think that I will, you know, I think we'll work around it. But I think this is, yeah, super cool combo.
Me
I don't
too.
Like looking like a fool. And so this was
you
nice.
Never have.
Yeah, so. Looking like a fool.
Well, great conversation. I'm JT, everybody. Thank you so much for listening.
I'm Jordan. We can't wait to have you back with us again. Until next time.
Thank you for keeping us curious.
Be brave, beautiful friends. If this podcast, or just JT, means something to you, it would mean the world to us if you had a second to share this episode or your favorite episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow on the homepage at letsdigintothat.com or wherever you listen to your podcasts. We adore you, love ninjas.
And we see you, rage pirates.
Thank you.